Bellevue Wine and True Crime lovers. I'm your host, Brandy, and this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, as we discuss the case of anime YouTuber turned murderer Trey Sessler. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Brandy.
How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
I'm doing good. We are now back from CrimeCon, feeling blessed and refreshed. Did you have a good time?
I did. I had an awesome time going down there. Yes.
It was a lot of fun. We got to meet a whole lot of people, met a whole lot of new friends. I got to squeeze Beth Holloway. That was pretty amazing, actually.
I did not.
No, you did not. But when I did, I just kind of, she was standing in podcast row. Nobody was really around. I know she just had done this big breakfast with some attendees, and I just had my opportunity to go and just hug her, and I did. I just hugged her, and you know what I said?
What did you say?
I said, "I'm so sorry," and I just started crying, and she looked at me, and she said, "That's so sweet," and her eyes started watering, and then we took a picture together, and that was my moment with her.
Yes.
And it was really, really special and great. So I got to meet Dr. Phil. Nancy Grace was there.
All my favorites.
So many fans of the show. People brought us wine.
I know. And I got a special beer.
Stein.
Not really a stein. No. More of a glass.
Yeah.
It's very cool, though.
It was so cool. So thank you, Jeremy, for bringing that over to us. And don't forget, CrimeCon is coming up in 2022 already. In fact, tickets are already on sale. It's going to be in Las Vegas. So, Chris, I think whether we end up on podcast row or not, we will probably definitely attending. And if you're a true crime fan, you guys have to go. You will absolutely love it. I'm telling you, we had the best time. Plus, Chris, a lot of people don't know this, but we actually met in Vegas.
We did.
We did. We met at a wedding in Las Vegas, but we don't live in Las Vegas. No, we both were living in Dallas. All right,
guys. Not afford to do this podcast.
Right. All right. So we'll definitely be there. You guys should be there. And of course, if you want to help support the show and keep the decanter full, feel free to buy us a glass of wine or two. All you need to do is click on the Ko-fi link on our website. And when you contribute to the wine fund, we give you your own personal little shout out on the show. And not only do you get a shout out, but when you buy two or more glasses for us, we now send you guys some cool Texas Wine and True Crime stickers. So thank you. Thank you to everyone who just keeps the show going, and all your support is appreciated. And of course, if you enjoy the show, please head over to Apple or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Click on those 5 stars because it only helps us. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button while you're there. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We love to connect with all of you. The wine for this week comes from our friends at Salado Winery. We are sipping on a white named Sweet Tweet. This Muscat Canelli has a floral aroma, citrus aftertaste, and is also a partnership project that Salado Winery did with Homestead Winery. So, of course, you guys hang out into the end for our wine rating and review. All right, babe. Are you ready to get into this week's case, Trey Sessler?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Let's sip some wine and talk some crime. All right, this week we are heading to Waller, Texas for this one. As usual, we want to give everyone just some fun facts about the city the crime took place in. So here we go. Number one, the town was named for Edwin Waller, the first judge of Waller County and one of the first signers of the Texas Declaration of Independence.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting. And since, you know, I'm kind of into that Texas Declaration of Independence and that sort of, I don't know, what do you call it? I went to school and got a master's degree in public administration. So I had to like learn we had like testing and had to write papers over the Declaration of Independence, not necessarily Texas Declaration of Independence.
I was gonna say, I think it's probably way different than our actual.
Oh, it's way different. Yeah. But just the whole, history thing. Absolutely. About it is very interesting.
Absolutely.
Number two, in 2019, the population in Waller was about 3,200 people. So maybe a tad bigger now, Chris, but still probably considered pretty small.
Pretty small town, yes.
And speaking of small town, your chances of becoming a victim of a violent crime in Waller is 1 in 872. Your odds are pretty good.
And pretty rare.
Crimes happen there,
for sure.
Which you can probably see why this was such a big one.
Yes.
On March 30th, 2012, anime YouTuber Trey Sessler shot and killed his mother, Rhonda, his dad, Lawton, and his brother, Mark, at their Waller, Texas home. After committing the acts, he wrote down on the walls, "Why did I do this? I love mom, dad, and brother." What happened on that fateful day in March 2012? All right, Chris, here we go. Another case about a young adult taking out his entire family for absolutely no reason.
I know there's a lot of these.
Let's talk about Trey for a bit. I really kind of wanted to get, when I was researching this case, and after reading it, I really wanted people to kind of get into the mind of what this kid was either going through, dealing with, his thought process, and maybe the whole social media thing. I don't know how much that contributed to what he actually ended up doing, but we'll talk about that. So Trey Eric Sessler, also known as Mr. Anime, he was born on August 3rd, 1989. So, Chris, he was 22 years old when he committed these murders. He did graduate from high school. From all accounts, he came from a normal middle-class family. He had friends. He was attending college at the time in Brenham, which is about 15 minutes from Waller. But he lived at home, right? So he was kind of doing the whole commuting thing. But he did have a dorm there as well. So he kind of came back and forth and back and forth. He kind of he took these odd and end jobs. And I read that he had about 2 years worth of college credit. Mm-hmm. But you know how it is. Sometimes he would like drop a few classes and then, you know, make them up the next semester. So it was said that him and his dad would often argue about the fact that he just couldn't hold a job. And family members sort of said he was a little bit strange, maybe a little peculiar. So in 2006, when he was 16 years old, Trey decided to start YouTubing, which I was thinking, is that even a word?
It kind of is.
Is YouTubing a word?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was kind of that so basically he was known to have kickstarted the whole YouTube anime thing. In fact, like a lot of people that do this anime stuff now on YouTube. Now, by the way, I did not research the anime YouTube community. Not a passion of mine.
Not? No.
He started his YouTubing being a reviewer, largely just discussing Japanese anime. Different video games. He would talk about guns, but not to the extent yet, as when we will talk a little bit further down about what he was doing. But basically, he was a reviewer of anime. But then his followers kind of started to notice a few changes in his behavior during his videos. He started showing signs that maybe his mental state was shifting a little bit. People would say his facial expressions. He seemed, I don't know, happier in the beginning, and things just sort of kind of were just looked like they were shifting for him. He began researching serial killers, which he started explaining on some of his videos, but not like how I research serial killers, right. But he would almost like praise the behavior. It came to find out he was basically ranking killings that had happened with serial killers, like who, you know.
And putting this out on YouTube?
Some of it was found on his computer later on.
Oh, okay.
But
he'll say, I'd be surprised that they would allow that sort of content to be up there. But
yeah,
you know,
no,
things slip through their little algorithm. So
yeah, no, I think it was just more of, I think he kept it as clean as he had to for YouTube. But outside of YouTube, he was definitely keeping journals and things on his computer. So he was praising the behavior of serial killers. He began actually using real guns in his videos. He would start talking about killing animals, doing videos about the different guns that he owned. And right. So when he was old enough to buy guns, Chris, he basically started buying guns.
Mm-hmm.
Like as soon as he was of age, he's like, okay, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I'm buying. And we'll talk about how many guns this kid actually have. And I say kid because He was only 22 years old when this happened. And shooting, so it was said that he would go to different buildings at night and shoot them and then put bottles like in front of the buildings and shoot those too. So this kid was just flailing around his use of firearm.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Brazenly.
Brazenly, yes. So his videos just started to become more extreme than obviously reviewing Japanese anime. Okay, according to an article in the Texas Monthly titled Mr. Anime is Planning Something, on December 11th, 2011, he put up a video called Very Bad News, Please Watch. And he wore these sunglasses, but Chris, he announced that he had been diagnosed with pneumothorax. Mm-hmm. Also, what is a collapsed lung?
Yeah, and how did he get that?
So, not sure how he actually got that. He did say like he was out of the hospital. He had made a video that he had got out of the hospital. But he said, quote, if you're religious, I'd appreciate it if you prayed for me. So just about a week before the murders, he put up another video titled Mr. Anime is Planning Something. So Chris, he was thanking everyone for following him, supporting him, praying for him, but he never actually stated what he was planning. And now it's time for a wine recess and a word from our sponsor. This week's episode is sponsored by the spooky podcast Ghost Town. Chris, I'm so excited to be sharing Ghost Town with our listeners. Ghost Town is a twice-weekly podcast covering and exploring some of the most mysterious and interesting places on Earth, like haunted hotels, abandoned malls, deserted amusement parks, locations of infamous true crimes, weird history, and more. Jason and Rebecca do a fantastic job exploring the deep, dark secrets of these haunted places. Plenty of episodes for you to binge on. You can find Ghost Town wherever you listen to your podcast or go to ghosttownpod.com. Okay, Chris. So we are drinking a sweet white wine, which you and I both would not normally be drinking a sweet white wine unless we're having some dessert.
Dessert, yes.
And what did you make that is, one, it goes perfectly with this wine, but two, it's just, it smells delicious. It looks delicious. And guys, you need the recipe for this, babe. Tell them what you made.
I made a delicious peach bread pudding with a little rum sauce to go on top.
Yeah.
Kind of
handmade.
To get it in the summer, you know.
It is so delicious. I will post pictures of it. And I have to say, when I went down to Salida Winery, she poured me a little glass of this sweet tweet. And I told June, I'm not much for sweet wine, but this is perfect for the summer.
Yes.
You can get this from Salado. They can ship anywhere in Texas. So if you like a sweet white wine in the summer, guys, you've got to get your hands on this one.
Yes, it was good. I think it really went nice with the peach cobbler. Not peach cobbler, sorry. Peach bread pudding. I keep thinking it almost looks like peach cobbler. But.
Well, that's because I kept asking, are you making cobbler? Are you making cobbler? Yeah. I just saw the peaches. It's so yummy. All right, babe, you ready to get back in the case?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. In the early morning of March 20th, 2012, so we're talking right after midnight, Chris, Trey lured his mother, Rhonda, out into the garage. So he basically told her that she needed to wake up and come and look at something on his car. He had a shotgun a rifle that was in the garage that police eventually believe he planted 2 days before the actual killing. Mm-hmm. And it was a firearm of her father. His mother walks out with him, and that's where he shoots her in the chest at point blank range with a high powered rifle. All right. After shooting his mother, he goes back inside the house, and his brother Mark is asking him. So his brother wakes up. Okay. His brother, I do believe, was 26 years old at the time.
He heard the shot.
Right. And he's like, what are y'all doing out there? That was really loud. And in different interviews, and I will talk about a few, he did like 4 separate interviews with Texas Rangers and local authorities, and I pulled a little bit from each of those interviews. But one thing that he mentioned was when his brother said that to him, he just walked right past him went into his bedroom, got a hand, got a different gun, and went into the hallway and just pointed at him and shot. He didn't even like answer his brother when he said, "Hey, what is going on out there? Where's mom?"
Very determined, sounds like.
Very determined. Okay, so after he walks past him, goes back into the hallway, he shoots him twice, but Chris, his brother actually manages to get into the bathroom and lock the door behind him. So he shot twice. Now he's in the bathroom with the locked door. His father, Lawton, who was sleeping, right? Well, this is in the middle of the night, after midnight, right? Was sleeping in his bedroom and he woke up after hearing the shots. So then Trey moves on to his dad, shooting him to death. So now he remembers my brother's in the bathroom. So he goes over to the bathroom and later, so basically later in interviews with the Texas Rangers, he said, quote, "I went back to my brother and started shooting through the bathroom door, maybe as many as seven times." He said he then kicked the door open to see his brother lying on the floor. And he said, quote, "And I was like, okay, I guess that's got him."
Cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded. He wanted to make sure they were all dead, Chris, so it wasn't enough. He actually goes back and traces his steps, beginning with his mother, to his brother, then his dad, and then goes back to his brothers again and decides to pop them more, you know, shoot them more. Just shoot them. I think he shot each of them two or three more times. Shortly after 2 a.m., he actually calls his parents' employers and leaves a very calm voicemail message letting them know that they would not be in that day.
That's creepy. Well, the thing is, too, it's a small town. I'm sure everybody knows almost everyone, you know?
Right.
To some degree.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're probably a little concerned, too.
So at some point in those early morning hours, he destroys the entire house. Okay, not only that, he starts writing things on the wall. So police would say when they walked in, they didn't even know where to start. He had literally ransacked the entire house, just destroyed it. And then he starts writing things on the wall, right? "Why did I do this? I love my mom, dad, and brother. God forgive me because I cannot forgive myself. Why did I do this?" I read that after all of this, he went and laid down by his mom's body and went to sleep. Did that just give you a shiver Norman up Bates. Your spine? That gave me a huge shiver up my spine when I read that. The bodies were located around 1 p.m. after officers passed by a window of the Sessler home and saw a deceased male. But Chris, why were they at the Sessler home looking anyways? I'll tell you why. Because the night before, they were already in that same neighborhood because a call came in and someone said that there were shots fired in the neighborhood. The cops go out. They don't find anything. And so the officers decide to check on the home the next day after a call comes in from concerned family members that they haven't heard from their loved ones. Waller County Sheriff Glenn Smith in the Houston Chronicle said, quote, "They hadn't heard from their relatives. They understood there had been some kind of disturbance, maybe at the house." Based on a tip, Sessler was located and apprehended later that evening. After his arrest, he had several interviews with the Texas Rangers and with local law enforcement after the murders. I won't go into every detail about each of these interviews because there is a lot, but he did divulge his actual original plan. He was going to kill at least 70 students at the school's pep rally in order to become the biggest mass murderer in history. Okay, so he's in college. He's going back to his alma mater, his high school. He was going to go to the pep rally and basically assassinate everyone at the pep rally.
So the parents were the trial run.
The parents were the trial run, but he told authorities he killed his family first to spare them from knowing what he had planned on doing. Basically to save them from having to like deal with being the parents and brother of the biggest mass murderer in history, yes. Right? However, he revealed that the event was becoming all too real. And as a result, he just gave up. He didn't go and try to attempt this at the school.
Well, and he got caught too.
Yes, he did, because of a tip came in. So they do believe he took the guns and ammunition after he woke up that morning, took the guns and ammunition in his car, because we'll talk about where all that was found. And he did drive to the high school. They do believe that his car was located and seen at the high school early that morning. And then it was said that he drove to Magnolia, which at a friend's house, but either the friend wasn't home or he was sitting in his car, but they don't know. I don't know exactly where the tip came from, but they found him and arrested him that same day that the bodies were found. So if he would have gone through with this, Chris, he would have no doubt pulled off the biggest mass murder in history. And now followed by the Las Vegas shooting, right, which happened in 2017. So we're talking 2012 right now. And that killed 58 people. And that is still number one. So this guy's right. He would have been the biggest mass murderer in history.
And a Texan. How about that?
And a Texan. All right. So also in these interviews with the Rangers and the Waller Police Department, he mentions having 16 different guns that he owns. He estimated that in the 2 years before his arrest, he had probably gone through 20 or 30 guns. He often traded them for others or pawned one or two at a time to buy street pills. And then he would buy them back once he had earned money. So, Chris, I read that as soon as he was old enough to buy a gun, I mentioned that he was starting to collect guns.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the pills for a second. He was diagnosed with several mental issues, right? Maybe some, he had seen a therapist, psychiatrist. They had given him, I don't know exactly the medication he was on, but his mother was actually supposed to be refilling the medication. There was actually a note that was found in the house that she wrote to him, basically saying, like, you know, I think it was Xanax. I'm pretty sure it was Xanax. We're talking 2012. It was easier to get Xanax back then. But so she was telling him that the Xanax can't be refilled until after the 30 days. So it looks like he was maybe taking more than he was supposed to, possibly. Mm-hmm. And we know now he was buying it off the streets. So self-medicating maybe more than he should with the guns, having the social media audience looking at him, praising him. I don't know. I mean, we talk about a lot all the time about kids or people that grow up in these normal families and that turn to things like this. And, you know, why?
Oh, I know. Especially you think living in a small town, something like this would never, ever happen to you. And clearly,
yeah,
no place is safe.
Well, police confirmed Trey had been practicing, Chris, this for several years. He was storing weapons in his college dorm. He was storing them in his room. They had found a few in some different buildings that he would go and actually shoot at and use as target practice. And we also know that he used the household pets as target practice. By the way, after he killed his family, they had a pet ferret, which he destroyed. He killed the ferret. Mm-hmm. And then his father had birds and he killed the birds. And so he, you know, again, we talk about the signs, right? The signs to look out for.
Yes.
You know, consistent bedwetting years and years and years, starting fires, you know, killing animals. Yeah. Yes, harming animals. So he has a large fascination with mass shootings, specifically Columbine. They found things on his computer having to relate with praising these kids that took so many lives at Columbine. After the arrest, what is so strange, and this is what's so strange to me, Chris, his friends would say that he was fascinated with like guns and violence, but only in video games. His friends, when they were interviewed after the shooting, they portrayed him very differently than law enforcement, right? Or, you know, they describe him as dangerous, troubled. Family member, same thing, right? Had some issues. But his friends said he never talked about any of this stuff. I mean, he was on YouTube. He did anime reviews. We played video games with him. We would go and visit him. He would come and visit us. We never thought he would actually do this to real people. So it's interesting.
It's kind of strange.
It is strange.
Because he had friends and stuff.
He
like
did.
That. That's usually they're usually the loners and stuff like that.
So he used that word in every interview he did. I'm a loner. I'm a loner. He said it over and over. But that's what's so strange is when they dove into his background and actually interviewed people, he was not a loner. Mm-hmm. So do you, maybe he just felt like one.
True.
I don't know. All right. So family members, you know, came forward again, just talked about how dangerous and troubled he was. The guns were a big concern. And I do believe if they hadn't caught him the day the bodies were discovered, they caught him the same day. They could have been dealing with a lot more on their hands.
There's no doubt.
Trey Sessler was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole or appeal. While there have been rumors, Chris, that he died in prison, he's actually listed, I looked, as an active inmate in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, so I don't believe he is deceased. Mm-hmm. But that's where he is, spending his rest of his life for killing his parents. So they wouldn't be shamed on an assassination mass shooting he was planning, yet he never even actually did.
Wow.
I mean, it just leaves you speechless. Just
absolutely.
I almost want to say the big F word because it's just like, golly. No, let's not say the big F word. But golly. Like.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too, is you always wonder what signs there actually were.
I know.
With this kid. So.
Well, and I always say, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. True. Nobody ever knows what families and people actually deal with. We saw that in the case, you know, of the two children that killed their mother, right? Or mm-hmm. the three people that killed that mother. And you just, you know, you go through the motions and you think you're being a great mom. Like the note that Rhonda left for him, for Trey, was telling him, you know, have a good day. It was great watching. Oh, what did they? They were watching some show together the night before. She's like, it was so nice watching this with you. And I'll make sure we get your medicine. It's just so heartbreaking. And then she's lured out into her garage. And what is waiting for her but a rifle that her father owned?
I know.
All right, Chris. Well, that concludes season 3, episode 7. Friends, if you want to see pictures related to this case, you can find them on our Instagram and Facebook page at Texas Wine and True Crime. All right, honey, are you ready to review the wine and cork it?
I am. Yes.
Okay. I just want to say big, big thank you to Salado Winery for sponsoring us at CrimeCon. And again, I think I posted this on our social media, but the next 3 episodes, we are just going to be drinking 3 of our favorites from, we actually have more than 3 from Salado, but we're going to be talking about 3 that are our favorites from Salado Winery and just telling you more about them. So as we said this week, we chose Sweet Tweet, which is a sweet white wine. So babe, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was very good. I think it went really nice with our kind of dessert themed, you know, that we presented for the evening. For
yes.
Our little pairing. You know, I think it's the muscat and it's probably what's making it so sweet, but it's good.
Yeah.
I do like it. Nice and cold. And especially for this type of weather that we're delving into here in Texas, especially the Dallas area, very warm. So sitting by the pool and having a little
sweet tweet.
A little sweet tweet.
When we were in Salado Winery, there was a lady that was in there that was buying a bunch of wine. And that's when I tried it. June poured myself and this lady a sip. And this lady was going crazy. She was like, this is so good. This is perfect for dessert. And that's what we remembered, right? She's like, I'm having a huge party. And this is what I'm going to be serving when I serve my, I don't know, handmade cannoli. Like she was making my mouth water. This woman was about to cook for like 30 people. But perfect for the dessert you made. Guys, if you want the recipe to this peach bread pudding, which in his homemade sauce, please feel free to email us and we will send you that recipe. Sure. Thank you again, babe, for Absolutely. Making something, another dish.
I kind of want to make like a white sangria with that wine too. So.
Yes. Oh, I think you could do a few things with that.
Yeah.
It's really good. And so don't forget, Salado Winery ships anywhere in Texas and you can find the perfect wine. Whether you enjoy a dry wine, a sweet wine, red or white, they carry something for everyone. So go check out our friends at SaladoWinery.com. And Chris, I'm giving Sweet Tweet a 4 cork today.
I would agree with that assessment.
All right. 4 corks for Sweet Tweet and check them out again at SaladoWinery.com. Okay, friends, each week, as you know, we highlight an organization that just inspires us to be givers and just better people in general. So, Chris, today I thought I wanted to kind of shine light on the problem we have in this country and something we're discussing in this case, which is mass shootings.
Yes.
This year alone, honey, we've had 234 mass shootings in the U.S. Isn't that kind of unbelievable to think about? I cannot get my head around that number.
Yeah, pretty much every weekend. There's,
think about this statistically. Six, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was one in Austin this weekend. So.
Yes.
But I mean, it wasn't like a...
But one person died.
One person died. I don't think it was a person going and seeking out shooting a bunch of people. I think it was two individuals that were arguing and fighting, two groups, and that's really not a lot. But nonetheless, it's still gun violence, you know, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah. And I did read that a mass shooting is constituted by having three or more people die during that shooting. Okay. That's what I did read. And guys, out of that 234, 20 of them have occurred in Texas.
No big shock.
Is that every weekend? Pretty close. Not far.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
One a month, two a month.
We're a little over halfway.
Halfway
through them. Well, crazy. We're at the halfway mark of the year. So, yeah.
So the organization I want to highlight is the National Compassion Fund. The NCF is a safe, transparent way for the public to give directly to the victims of mass casualty crimes, including shootings and terrorist attacks. So, Chris, the money that's raised goes directly to the families of the victims in these random acts of violence. And the fund is actually overseen by people who are experts, right, in specifically with crime and crime victims. The National Center for Victims of Crime brings to the fund 3 decades of experience as the leading national resource and advocacy organization for crime victims and those who serve them. Guys, there is a lot of information on their website, nationalcompassionfund.org. They are doing some great things for these families. And well, just based on the statistics I just read off, the help I think is needed now more than ever.
Absolutely.
It's just so terribly sad. And let's just say we're going to say in lots of prayers that this stuff stops eventually, because it's starting just to become out of control. 234 is a lot.
I know. I would agree.
In a 6-month period. All right. Well, friends, until we meet again, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.
Cheers.